Chapter 28. Do you? Not for a moment, I declared, and was surprised to see her look pleased. She was an aristocrat to the tips of her fingers. She really didn't care for anybody. As he had passed through the empire, as he had lived through a siege, had rubbed shoulders with the commune, had seen everything, no doubt, of what men are capable in the pursuit of their desires, or in the extremity of their distress, for love, for money, and even for honor, and in her precarious connection with the very highest spheres as he had kept her own honorability unscathed, while as he had lost all her prejudices. She was above all that. Perhaps the world was the only thing that could have the slightest checking influence. But when I ventured to say something about the view it might take of such an alliance, she looked at me for a moment with visible surprise. My dear Monsieur George, I have lived in the great world all my life. It's the best that there is, but that's only because there is nothing merely decent anywhere. It will accept anything, forgive anything, forget anything in a few days. And after all, who will he be marrying? A charming, clever, rich and altogether uncommon woman. What did the world hear of her? Nothing. The little it saw of her was in the Bois for a few hours every year, riding by the side of a man of unique distinction, and of exclusive tastes, devoted to the cult of aesthetic impressions. A man of whom, as far as aspect, manner, and behavior goes, she might have been the daughter. I have seen her myself. I went on purpose. I was immensely struck. I was even moved. Yes. She might have been except for that something radiant in her that marked her apart from all the other daughters of men. The few remarkable personalities that count in society and who were admitted into Henry Alliger's pavilion treated her with punctilious reserve. I know that. I have made inquiries. I know she sat there amongst them like a marvelous child, and for the rest, what can they say about her? That when abandoned to herself by the death of Alliger as he has made a mistake? I think that any woman ought to be allowed one mistake in her life. The worst they can say of her is that she discovered it, that as he had sent away a man in love directly she found out that his love was not worth having, that as he had told him to go and look for his crown, and that, after dismissing him, she had remained generously faithful to his cause, in her person and fortune. And this, you will allow, is rather uncommon upon the whole. You make her out very magnificent, I murmured, looking down upon the floor. Isn't she? Exclaimed the aristocratic Mrs. Blunt, with an almost youthful ingenuousness, and in those black eyes which looked at me so calmly there was a flash of the southern beauty, still naive and romantic, as if altogether untouched by experience. Don't think there is a single grain of vulgarity in all her enchanting person. Neither is there in my son. I suppose you won't deny that he is uncommon. She paused. Absolutely, I said in a perfectly conventional tone. I was now on my mettle that she should not discover what there was humanly common in my nature. She took my answer at her own valuation and was satisfied. They can't fail to understand each other on the very highest level of idealistic perceptions. Can you imagine my John thrown away on some enamored white goose out of a stuffy old salon? Why, she couldn't even begin to understand what he feels, or what he needs. Yes, I said impenetrably, he is not easy to understand. I have reason to think, she said with a suppressed smile, that he has a certain power over women. Of course I don't know anything about his intimate life, but a whisper or two have reached me, like that, floating in the air, and I could hardly suppose that he would find an exceptional resistance in that quarter of all others. But I should like to know the exact degree. I disregarded an annoying tendency to feel dizzy that came over me, and was very careful in managing my voice. May I ask, madam, why you are telling me all this? For two reasons, she condescended graciously. First of all, because Mr. Mills told me that you were much more mature than one would expect. In fact, you look much younger than I was prepared for. Madam, I interrupted her. I may have a certain capacity for action and for responsibility, but as to the regions into which this very unexpected conversation has taken me, I am a great novice. They are outside my interest. I have had no experience. Don't make yourself out so hopeless, she said in a spoiled beauty tone. You have your intuitions. At any rate, you have a pair of eyes. You are everlastingly over there, so I understand. Surely you have seen how far they are. Dot, I interrupted again, and this time bitterly, but always in a tone of polite inquiry. You think her facile, madam? She looked offended. Think her most fastidious. It is my son who is in question here. And I understood then that she looked on her son as irresistible. For my part, I was just beginning to think that it would be impossible for me to wait for his return. I figured him to myself lying dressed on his bed sleeping like a stone. But there was no denying that the mother was holding me with an awful, tortured interest. Twice Therese had opened the door, had put her small head in, and drawn it back like a tortoise. But for some time I had lost the sense of us two being quite alone in the studio. I had perceived the familiar dummy in its corner, but it lay now on the floor, as if Therese had knocked it down angrily with a broom for a heathen idol. It lay there prostrate, handless, without its head, pathetic, like the mangled victim of a crime. John is fastidious too, began Mrs. Blunt again. Of course he wouldn't suppose anything vulgar in his resistances to a very real sentiment. One has got to understand his psychology. He can't leave himself in peace. He is exquisitely absurd. I recognized the phrase. Mother and son talked of each other in identical terms. But perhaps exquisitely absurd was the Blunt family saying? There are such sayings in families, and generally there is some truth in them. Perhaps this old woman was simply absurd. She continued. We had a most painful discussion all this morning. He is angry with me for suggesting the very thing his whole being desires. I don't feel guilty. It's he who is tormenting himself with his infinite scrupulosity. Ah, I said, looking at the mangled dummy like the model of some atrocious murder. H, the fortune. But that can be left alone. What nonsense! How is it possible? It isn't contained in a bag, you can't throw it into the sea. And moreover, it isn't her fault. I am astonished that you should have thought of that vulgar hypocrisy. No, it isn't her fortune that cheats my son, it's something much more subtle. Not so much her history as her position. He is absurd. It isn't what has happened in her life. It's her very freedom that makes him torment himself and her, to as far as I can understand. I suppressed a groan and said to myself that I must really get away from there. Mrs. Blunt was fairly launched now. For all his superiority, he is a man of the world, and shares to a certain extent its current opinions. He has no power over her. She intimidates him. He wishes he had never set eyes on her. Once or twice this morning he looked at me, as if he could find it in his heart, to hate his old mother. There is no doubt about it, he loves her, Monsieur George. He loves her, this poor, luckless, perfect homme du monde. The silence lasted for some time, and then I heard a murmur. 'Tis a matter of the utmost delicacy between two beings so sensitive, so proud. It has to be managed. I found myself suddenly on my feet and saying with the utmost politeness that I had to beg her permission to leave her alone as I had an engagement, but she motioned me simply to sit down, and I sat down again. I told you I had a request to make, she said. Have understood from Mr. Mills that you have been to the West Indies, that you have some interests there. I was astounded. Interests? I certainly have been there, I said, but... Dot, she caught me up. Can why not go there again? I am speaking to you frankly because... Dot, but, madam, I am engaged in this affair with Dona Rita, even if I had any interests elsewhere. I won't tell you about the importance of my work. I didn't suspect it, but you brought the news of it to me, and so I needn't point it out to you. And now we were frankly arguing with each other. But where will it lead you in the end? You have all your life before you, all your plans, prospects, perhaps dreams, at any rate your own tastes, and all your lifetime before you. And would you sacrifice all this to the pretender? A mere figure for the front page of illustrated papers. ... I never think of him, I said curtly, but I suppose Donarita's feelings, instincts, call it what you like or only her chivalrous fidelity to her mistakes, Donarita's presence here in this town, her withdrawal from the possible complications of her life in Paris has produced an excellent effect on my son. It simplifies infinite difficulties, I mean moral as well as material. It's extremely to the advantage of her dignity, of her future, and of her peace of mind. But I am thinking, of course, mainly of my son. He is most exacting. I felt extremely sick at heart. And so I am to drop everything and vanish, I said, rising from my chair again. And this time Mrs. Blunt got up too, with a lofty and inflexible manner, but she didn't dismiss me yet. Yes, she said distinctly. LL this, my dear Monsieur George, is such an accident. What have you got to do here? You look to me like somebody who would find adventures, wherever he went, as interesting, and perhaps less dangerous than this one. She slurred over the word dangerous, but I picked it up. What do you know of its dangers, madam, may I ask? But she did not condescend to hear. And then you too, have your chivalrous feelings, she went on, unswerving, distinct, and tranquil. Who are not absurd. But my son is. He would shut her up in a convent for a time if he could. He isn't the only one, I muttered. Indeed, she was startled, then lower, yes. That woman must be the center of all sorts of passions, she mused audibly. But what have you got to do with all this? It's nothing to you. She waited for me to speak. Exactly, madam, I said, and therefore I don't see why I should concern myself in all this one way or another. No, she assented with a weary air, except that you might ask yourself, what is the good of tormenting a man of noble feelings, however absurd? His southern blood makes him very violent sometimes. I fear, and then for the first time during this conversation, for the first time since I left Donarita the day before, for the first time I laughed. Do you mean to hint, madam, that southern gentlemen are dead shots? I am aware of that from novels. I spoke looking her straight in the face, and I made that exquisite, aristocratic old woman positively blink by my directness. There was a faint flush on her delicate old cheeks, but she didn't move a muscle of her face. I made her a most respectful bow, and went out of the studio. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.